Well, a big thanks to Darren and the team for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, April 2nd. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show with Beto da Silva at 7pm, Keith Tracy has his say on the midweek Premier League action, while Fergal Brennan dials in from Anfield ahead of the Merseyside derby. Damien Lawler brings us all the latest GAA talking points, while Nadine Doherty reviews the Ladies Football National League. Plus, we'll hear from Daniel Whiffen ahead of the Irish Open Championships, and Munster's Jack Crowley opens up on his future. We'll also round up today's sports news headlines, so if you want to get in touch, you can WhatsApp 087-187-9200, text 51552, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Good evening, welcome along to the show, welcome along to an hour of sport on 2FM, welcome along to Keith Tracy. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Shane, how are you?
I'm very well, very well. Looking forward to Friday night, Keith?
I am, yeah. You say that with a little glint in your eye. No, I am. I can't wait. I think it'll be a cracker of a game. I think both teams in form. A Dublin derby. They seem to just keep rolling around. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, St. Pat's Shells, of course, what we're referring to. The small matter of St. Pat's and Shells on Friday. Right, before we get stuck into football this evening and chat Premier League and a bit of European football news as well, some news headlines, and starting with rugby. Mike Prendergast, Dennis Leamy and Cully Tucker have all been added to the Irish coaching team for this summer's tour of Georgia and Portugal. The trio have been recruited as cover, while Simon Easterby, Andrew Goodwin and John Fogarty are all away with the British and Irish lines in Australia, while Paul O'Connell was previously confirmed to step in as head coach, while Andy Farrell is also away on the Lions tour. Leinster's Sean O'Brien had been expected to be involved after his defence coach role for the A-side in February, but Munster's Dennis Leamy will now fill Easterby's regular position with Ireland this summer. Jack Crowley says nothing is committed as his future with Munster remains up in the air. The Ireland and Munster out half has yet to decide on where his future lies as he mulls over a lucrative offer from the Leicester Tigers as well as a deal from his home province. On Saturday, Munster's interim coach and head of rugby operations Ian Costello said he was confident Crowley would be playing his rugby at Thomond Park next season, but there have been conflicting reports in recent days around how close he actually is to signing on for another deal in Ireland. The 25-year-old was speaking to Michael Corcoran earlier today.
And nothing's committed at this moment in time, but I think my focus has always trying to be compartmentalised, things like this, and you know, keep the main thing that's on the pitch and deliver performances, and opportunities like this will be there for every player throughout their career, and it's just about learning that it's part of the game, and you know, you've got to be able to go out and perform still at the end of the day, because that's what gets you these opportunities and gets you to where you want to be. So at the moment, the focus is on Saturday, and that's where it's always been. And I'll continue to deliver performances. That's my main focus, and it'll look after itself then, hopefully.
You've mentioned the word compartmentalise at one stage. Is that what you've got to do to try and concentrate and give your full focus to what you can do on the pitch, basically, with a view to people who look after you, looking after the other stuff?
It is, to a certain element, yeah. This situation wasn't happening, it would be with something else, you know what I mean? It would be with another decision that you have to make. It would be with anything that would come up in everyday life. You know, it's not just, obviously this situation with the contract requires attention and, you know, focus, but equally the small stuff as well that creeps up on you in your everyday routine and your daily life that you've got to create time and space for as an individual. And if you don't, it'll start leaking over into other things and other areas, such as being in a team environment. If you don't have your own house in order, you know, you won't be able to add the value that you want to that team. So for me, I've just learned to grow in that area of understanding that it's part of it, and it requires focus and attention, but so does everything if you want to be great at it. And you know, that's something that I'm committed to, and yeah, we'll see what happens with it.
Jack Crowley speaking to Michael Corcoran earlier this afternoon. Now, some League of Ireland news. Kevin McHugh has been appointed Finn Harps manager, succeeding Darren Murphy, who departed last week after a difficult start to the First Division campaign. The Donegal native made his Harps debut as a 17-year-old back in 1998, and across two stints at the club scored 186 goals and 438 appearances for the club. He stands as the fifth highest goal scorer in League of Ireland history. The 45-year-old has been part of the first team coaching staff since September 2023 as an assistant, and now steps up to take on the management role for the first time. McHugh, along with Eamon Curry and Tommy Canning, took charge of the team for last week's 1-0 win away to Athlone Town, the club's second win of the campaign. They currently occupy sixth position in the table with 7 points, 12 adrift of leaders Dundalk. However, that is a league table that may have changed somewhat in the last 20 minutes, because the greatest league in the world, they say, there has been a statement regarding men's first division fixtures. So following the conclusion of a disciplinary process regarding player eligibility in the SSC Electricity Men's First Division, an independent disciplinary committee has reached the following decisions. Wexford FC fielded an ineligible player, Dara Dunn, in their fixture against UCD on February 14th of this year. In accordance with FEI disciplinary regulations, Wexford have forfeited this fixture by a scoreline of 3-0. Kerry FC fielded an ineligible player, Stephen Stanich Floody, and Finn Harps fielded an ineligible player, Gavin Hutchins, in their fixture versus each other on February 14, 2025. In accordance with the FAI disciplinary regulations, the result of this fixture is annulled, meaning that the result is void and neither team will receive any points. Note, these decisions are subject to appeal. I don't even know what the follow-up question is here, Keith.
Very, very strange, isn't it? I've never
seen a League of Ireland fixture annulled.
Yeah, I had to Google what annulled mean actually to get the gist of it. But look, it's a strange one. It's not something we see too often. But the fact that it's not just a standalone player, maybe something has gone wrong there for all teams involved. But it's not the sort of attention we want to be highlighting in the League of Ireland. But these little silly amateur things keep happening.
Yeah, no, it is not ideal. And Wexford, they're lower down the table now. Stephen Elliott, of course, in charge. We will be building up to all the League of Ireland later this week. However, attention turns to Premier League action. We will review last night's action and preview this evening's action. Fergal Brennan joins us live from Anfield with the atmosphere, I'm sure, building ahead of a Merseyside derby. Fergal.
Yeah, indeed. Huge amount of traffic to get here this evening, but safely in place here at Anfield. A little bit of a strange kind of sensation behind the scenes, because we're at the point in the season where a lot of things have already been decided. Obviously, within Liverpool, they're being very cagey over title talk. It's going to take something absolutely enormous and ridiculous to change the situation that Liverpool are going to get their hands on the Premier League title. But obviously, that's balanced against the frustration of bowing out of the other competition. So it's a little bit of an odd mood in a way, because you cannot do down the Premier League title. It's an enormous achievement. Arne Slot would be picking it up after a first season in charge, which would be a massive accomplishment for him. His first season in English football, obviously following Jurgen Klopp, but you just kind of can't escape that what might have been because of the Champions League, the FA Cup, and obviously losing the Carabao Cup final to Newcastle, which is the last time that Liverpool have been in action. There's been a big long break over the internationals to finally get back to Premier League football.
Keith, the last time you and I were chatting football, we were top-trumping each other with a few stats. So for David Moyes, Anfield has become the stuff of nightmares. 21 matches managed there, no wins, 14 defeats and 36 goals conceded. Can that misery end tonight?
Look, they definitely have a chance, Everton, tonight. I think it's a very, very different Everton team to the team that Sean Dyche had. So, yeah, I do give Everton a chance. The last six Premier League games Everton have played, they've got five draws and one win. So they're difficult to turn over. Don't win an awful lot of games, but very, very difficult to turn over. But you also look at Liverpool's stats in this, and Liverpool's XG, it's over two goals a game, and that, you know, at Anfield generally in the last 15 games, the last 15 domestic games at Anfield, they've scored at least twice. So you're looking at Everton to score three. Big, big pressure on Jake O'Brien, Tarkowski, Braithwaite, Mikalenko. Whoever starts at the back for Everton will have a big, big job. But you look at Liverpool against PSG, they were outclassed for long, long periods over the two legs. And obviously they lost their last game as well, so against Newcastle in the final. So it's the first time they've ever lost back-to-back games, or ever. The first time they've lost back-to-back games this season. So there's a little bit of a question over Liverpool. The Trent stuff to Real Madrid is starting to rumble on as well now. So one or two questions, but in terms of Everton beating Liverpool, I think can happen in terms of Liverpool falling off a cliff and Arsenal getting back into the title race. I'm not that optimistic.
Okay, you mentioned a couple of perhaps distractions. Paul from Sligo actually texts in, 51552 is the text number, asking Fergal, what is the latest on Trent Alexander-Arnold?
I think as it currently stands is the same situation as of a week ago. There has been a fairly big shift towards getting the Real Madrid deal wrapped up. That's certainly not done and dusted. But as it stands, I think it's always been the same position that he is the most likely to leave. Salah is kind of somewhere in the middle, and then Virgil van Dijk, again without any confirmation, is the closest of the three to signing his contract renewal. There is obviously still some hope within the fan base that Trent has a change of heart, but I look at the situation and speaking to people who are involved quite closely at the club, this is a conversation that went on last summer. This has been a deal that's been in the works for in and around 12 months, and yes, Arne Slot has come in and done a fantastic job, but the structure of these types of transfer deals, particularly when no fee is involved and you're dealing with agents and players' representatives dealing directly with rival clubs, there's very little involvement, very little that the retaining club can do to keep that player in place. I think it is effectively done, as we're talking about it here tonight. It would have to take something really, really significant in the next few weeks to change that position. Because for me personally, I think this has been decided months ago. Trent Alexander-Arnold had a very good season personally. Liverpool have been very good collectively. But these decisions are made almost outside the noise, if that makes sense. There's obviously a lot of anger, a lot of disappointment from many, many, many Liverpool fans because of the way it's gone down. I think this has been decided a long time ago and has been kind of discussed outside of that wider conversation where Trent has looked for what he wants to do with the next stage of his career.
At this stage, Keith, if you're a Liverpool fan, would you just want closure? Just announce it. Just if he's going, he's going. If he's staying at this stage, just stop all this rumours circulating.
I would be fairly certain he is going to go because like we've just been saying that, you know, this has been in the works for a while now. And look, I also think that Liverpool fans should think that out of the three, Van Dijk, Salah and Trent, I think Trent is the one you would be okay going out the door. I think Mo Salah is irreplaceable. Van Dijk is probably still one of the best centre-halves, if not the best centre-half in the world. And Trent is brilliant on the ball, wonderful, world-class on the ball. But at right-back defensively, you know, there is weaknesses there. And look, I do also think that if Real Madrid are, you know, if Trent was under contract, would they be willing to break the bank for Trent Alexander-Arnold? I'm not so sure. So I think Trent knew exactly what he was doing, letting his contract run down, not signing another deal with the view of going to Real Madrid. So I totally agree. I think this has been on the cards and on the back burner with Trent for a long time. Whether Liverpool fans would want that to come out now at the end of the season where they've just got beaten in a final, they've been dumped out of the Champions League, is the next news you want to hear that, oh yeah, by the way, one of your, you know, one of the stalwarts, one of your best players, the Liverpool lad, is off to Real Madrid. That's probably not what the fans want to hear right now, although I think everybody is resigned to the fact that it's more than likely going to happen.
Would a 32-year-old and a 33-year-old not be more replaceable than a 26-year-old talent in Trent Alexander-Arnold? And a big statement to say Van Dijk, best defender in the world?
There or thereabouts. I love Rudiger. I think Rudiger's up there, is probably one of the best centre-halves in the world. I think Sven Botman, when he gets fit at Newcastle, will be there or thereabouts. And I don't think Van Dijk is a million miles away from that conversation. To say he's the best is probably a little bit of a stretch, but there or thereabouts. And look, when he reads the game, when he's on song, I think Van Dijk is just about irreplaceable. And I think the one that you're, maybe it's Irish eyes looking at a chain thinking Conor Bradley can go and play a few more games. Maybe that's it. But also there's been one or two players, the right back at Bayer Leverkusen, his name escapes me. Frimpong, sorry. His name has been trying about coming at Anfield. So look, I don't know. But I do think if you ask Liverpool fans, if you had to lose one, I think it would be Trent.
Yeah, Fergal, might there be some ready-made replacements on the cards?
Yeah, I think that certainly will be the plan in the short to medium term. Conor Bradley, when he's been used this season, he's been excellent. He's got the right attitude. He's got the right skill set. He's a very modern type of fullback, but not in the same way that Trent is. He's still defensively very, very capable, and it's a measure of him that he's been used in games where Arne Slot has recognised the situation that defensively Trent is either being caused problems or will be caused problems, so he won't start and he'll play Conor Bradley there. I go back to the PSG game. I spoke to quite a few people going into that, and I personally said I would have played Conor Bradley just for that idea of the greater defensive security that he gives you against an attack like PSG. Obviously, Arne Slot saw it a different way. I'm not saying that was the decisive factor, but Liverpool are out of the Champions League. I think Conor Bradley's more than capable of being a Premier League level right back. That there is the possibility, Keith mentioned there, Jeremy Frimpong coming in from Bayer Leverkusen. I think that's more based on the idea that Liverpool are expecting a very busy season next year. Premier League, domestic cups, Champions League. Slot wants two very capable operators in every position. And that will be the case if they bring someone in to strengthen and just add a bit more experience in. Conor Bradley, for all the capability and promise he's got, he's still a very young man in terms of the kind of hard knocks of the Premier League. So you wouldn't want to throw too much on his shoulders for next season. But I think he's certainly shown that he's got enough in his locker to start for Liverpool and be an important player for them.
You mentioned Rudiger, Keith. I just do want to give a mention of the Copa del Rey semi-final, because we touched on that on last night's show with Mark Langdon. He said it would be grand. Real Madrid won up against Sociedad in aggregate. It's in the Bernabeu. 4-4 it ended after extra time. Madrid progressed 5-4 in aggregate. Rudiger with a goal in the 115th minute. And there was absolute carnage at the end. Sociedad thought they were going through. They scored in the 80th minute at Orazabal. Then Bellingham and Tchouaméni scored in the 82nd, 86th minute. And then Orazabal equalised in the 93rd minute to bring it to extra time. And then Real Madrid progressed. So great scenes across Europe, because we did touch on it with Mark yesterday as well. And also, a word on third tier Arminia Bielefeld, who stunned defending champions Bayer Leverkusen to reach the final of the German Cup, fighting back from a goal down to triumph 2-1 and become the first team outside the top two divisions to knock four Bundesliga sides out of the German Cup in one season. Elsewhere this evening in the Premier League, Keith, there's a big race for Europe ongoing. It's probably the talking point in the league, considering Liverpool are probably going to win the league. You can probably take a fair guess at who's going to get relegated. Newcastle against Brentford, Manchester City against Leicester City. Will that victory in the League Cup for Newcastle galvanise them, or might they still be celebrating?
I'm not sure. I think we'll know inside the first 10 minutes what type of Newcastle is turning up, if they've enjoyed it a little bit too much, how much celebrating have they been doing. It's a wonderful occasion for Newcastle to go and win a cup, but back to domestic matters, and that race for Europe is so, so big now, and with the financial backing they have and with the players they have available, I'm sure Eddie Howe is saying, look, we need a little bit more, we always want more. So brilliant, they've got a cup in the back pocket, but the season is still ongoing. And this Brentford team, although they're in 11th place, they're only 8 points off fourth. So they'll be thinking, we can just jump on the back of this Champions League race as well. Although, you know, Europa League, Conference League is probably a little bit more obtainable. They will still have hopes of that. So Brentford won't roll over. And if they smell any weakness in this Newcastle team or any sort of a hangover, they will go straight for the jugular. But if the Geordies are bouncing, if the team are up for it, I think Newcastle are a very, very hard team to turn over, especially at home.
Fergal, how destabilising will the Erling Haaland injury be to Manchester City for the run-in in their league season?
I think given the position that they're in the table, and the likelihood is that the Premier League will get an extra spot for the Champions League next season, I think they'll be able to tick that box, whether they get fourth or fifth. I'd still be quite confident that they will. There's still enough signs where when they do turn it on, when it does click and they are able to show the quality that they've got, that they're still a real force. We saw that in the second half of the FA Cup against Bournemouth. They were struggling, they were up against it, and the changes, the conversation at half-time, the bringing on of Nico O'Reilly, he was fantastic for them. I still think they've got so much quality in that team that they'll be okay for Champions League qualification. Erling Haaland, the injury is a blow. It's very strange to see him injured. I don't think he's had this length of time off that he's expected to have at any point in his career. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he gets left now for the Club World Cup in the summer, because if it's 6-7 weeks, there's maybe 2-3 Premier League games left. Is it worth bringing him back in, particularly if top four or top five is ticked off? The Club World Cup's been put on the back burner by a lot of fans because it's kind of been forgotten about and pushed off into the summer. But it's a tournament that Manchester City, particularly the ownership, value quite highly. There's a massive prize pot involved in it as well. So I think there's a chance that we might not see him again this season. If we do, it might not be until the final day or the penultimate day of the season just to get some games into him to then move on into the Club World Cup in the summer.
Brighton against Aston Villa, Keith, and also Bournemouth against Ipswich, and Ipswich in 18th place. Bournemouth have drifted off somewhat, but they still are in thereabouts for European run. Brighton Villa, though, that's going to be a key battle and a key fixture this evening for European placings.
Yeah, and Brighton have done really well of late. They're unbeaten in 5 now, 1-4, drew 1, but the 6th game on that list is a 7-0 hammering to Nottingham Forest, so it does just make you wonder about Brighton at times. But look, they've reacted really, really well. This Aston Villa team, for my money, I think they're brilliant in midfield. I love John McGinn up front, Ollie Watkins, some of the boys on the wing really, really excite me. But Villa have conceded 9 goals this season after the 76th minute. So there's just signs that they're starting to get that little bit leggy in games. And I go back to the Olympiacos game in Europe last year. On paper, Aston Villa are a much better team than Olympiacos, but Olympiacos were just able to outwork them because they didn't have the squad depth to go and compete on all fronts. And the fact that they've gone deep into the Champions League, I think you will see that start to hurt them in the Premier League. But there's no reason they can't still have European ambitions of, you know, getting on the back of that race. But Brighton are a decent team at home.
Okay, elsewhere, Crystal Palace are away to bottom side Southampton. Last night, gentlemen, we had Arsenal defeating Fulham 2-1, Wolves defeating West Ham by 1-0, and the same scoreline for Nottingham Forest at home to Manchester United. Bukayo Saka back and he scored, Keith. Big boost, particularly with 9 Champions League. However, bad news. Gabriel, Timber, both went off. Ben White, Ricardo Calafiori already ruled out pre-match. How concerning are those defensive frailties?
Very concerning. Just as you know, we think we're getting Saka back. It's brilliant. You think Arsenal now over the 2 legs of Real Madrid, they'll be able to compete an awful lot better. But when you see Gabriel going down, you're thinking, oh God, that's really, really going to hurt Arsenal, because the centre half partnership they have is absolutely excellent. So losing one of them is a big, big blow. And the other defenders, Timber slotted in there, he's probably done an underrated job, but been really, really good. Also, Ben White is a big miss. And look, I didn't fancy Arsenal to beat Real Madrid. I think Arsenal are more than capable of beating Madrid in London, but beating them over the 2 legs, I think, in the Bernabeu will be a big, big ask. And what I've seen of this Arsenal team over the last couple of months, they're toothless at times, and I don't think you can afford to be toothless against Real Madrid. Any chance you get has to hit the back of the net. You have to be absolutely clinical, because when it comes to it, Real Madrid will be. And the likes of Vinicius Jr. and Mbappe, Bellingham, it really does strike fear into all defences.
Fergal, we all got very excited that Evan Ferguson was starting last night for West Ham. However, they lost 1-0. He missed a glorious opportunity to put aside one up as well before Wolves scored, and he was hooked at half time. Has Graham Potter come out and spoke about the thinking behind the substitutes?
Yeah, he was quite firm about it in his post-match press conference, where he pointed to the chance. He didn't name Evan Ferguson, but he pointed to the one big chance that we missed in the first half. We changed it at the half-time, and we were much better in the second half. So it's as clear as you can, really, that he's pointing to those alterations that he made. Nicholas Fulcrum came on, and obviously very experienced as a kind of hold-up style striker, different to the skill set that Evan offers. I did watch this game last night, and I have to say, in Evan's defence, I think the chance was a bit tricky. I don't think it's a great ball from Jared Bowen. We saw in midweek in the international break that the goal he got at the Aviva, you can just see the confidence just back in his face. I think it was a bit unfair on Potter hooking him at half-time. Given his age, given his current situation at West Ham, this was a game where I don't really think there would have been much harm leaving him on until the hour or a little bit longer. When you see him getting taken off, you immediately think, is there a bit of an injury because of what's gone on in the last few months? So I thought it was a little bit harsh, that the decision and the comments. Graham Potter was the manager that's brought him in on loan. They've obviously worked together at Brighton before. He brought him in and gave him his Premier League debut during his time on the South Coast. So I do think Graham Potter's got to shoulder some of the responsibility here. He made the decision to bring Ferguson in. He knew the situation, that he needed his fitness and his confidence building up. He's not going to get either of those things if he's getting substituted at half-time, and certainly not if it's a bit harsh on him getting taken off in a game that was fairly evenly balanced and that he was having a bit of an impact on.
Yeah, Keith, you're nodding your head in agreement somewhat with the harshness.
Yeah, I agree that it is harsh, but at the end of the day, he hasn't been playing that well. He hasn't been scoring goals. I understand that bringing him into the club, he you know, Graham Potter realises he needs minutes, he needs confidence, but at the end of the day, if you're not doing it, the manager's every right to take you off the pitch. And look, he's a very, very young lad, Evan. Although he has, you know, a good bit of Premier League experience, he's an Irish international, he still is learning the game. It's not going to be, you know, you're a professional footballer and everything's rosy in the garden for the rest of your career. There's going to be hard points. There's going to be times where you have to knuckle down. There's going to be times where you feel you've been harshly treated. This is possibly one of those occasions with Evan, but he's a young lad. He needs to bounce back and he needs to show he has that resilience because... As we said, the goal, the second goal against Bulgaria in the Viva, the little 1-2 at the edge of the box, the finish, we can all see it. He has the talent, but every now and then you just have to show to your manager, you have the backbone, the want and the desire to be in the team. And the one thing I would say to Evan is, there's only Fulkrug there. If you can poke your head ahead of Fulkrug, you're the number one striker. And I know he likes to play Boeing through the middle every now and then, but I think ideally Graham Potter would keep Boeing on the wing.
Well, to compound the misery, Troy Parrott scored for Alkmaar in a 2-2 draw. Back-to-back goals now in matches for Troy. 19 for the season across League Cup and Europa League. The other match last night, Fergal, did Manchester United deserve a draw in the end?
Possibly, based on the kind of the chances that they created late on. But you also have to throw a bit of credit towards Nottingham Forest. And we've seen them do this so many times this season. They get a narrow lead, or even if they're level, they've got so much faith in that back four and that goalkeeper that they're happy to let teams come onto them. Even teams that have got the ability to score from distance with Manchester United, Bruno Fernandes and others. Murillo, I love him. He's been one of my favourite players this season. He throws himself in front of everything. He's a leader. He's up celebrating tackles. Matt Sells is a fantastic goalkeeper. And that's been the basis of why Forest are where they are, pushing for a Champions League place into the FA Cup semi-finals now as well, because they just back themselves in those defensive situations. They know that Manchester United don't have a lot of confidence at the moment, but they do still carry an attacking threat. But they're so positive about the fact that we can defend a lead. 15 minutes to go. We've been here before. We know what we're doing. United did create chances. One of them could have maybe bounced a little bit favourably in their way, but it didn't. And you have to learn to play against different types of teams. You know what Forest are going to do at home. They've got brilliant pace on the counter-attack. Saw that with the Elanga goal. And then they will just block you out of the game. You have to find a way to break through that. And they just didn't. And that's why ultimately you find themselves where they are in the table.
Very briefly, Keith, the main thing we've learned really is Harry Maguire is the answer to United's forward problems.
Harry Maguire is the answer. I've just been looking and the XG, Harry Maguire come on in the 88th minute and was true up front by Ruben Amorim. And in the 5-10 minutes he was on the pitch, he had an XG of 0.59. Over Rasmus Højlund's last 9 games, they're level with that XG. So it just goes to show you how poor the forward line of Manchester United have been. And if a bloke that's called Sean Dyche, if he'd have thrown Harry Maguire up front, my God, the pelters he would have took. But the fact that it's a Portuguese bloke that is tactically very, very sound, people just seem to say, oh yeah, I understand the merits of that one. So, but I have to say, United did look threatening and Harry Maguire had one cleared off the line also. So although it's old school, sometimes it's still very, very effective.
Going for the Gary Doherty or the Jamie Harris way
Quinn
of thinking.
Phillips. Quinn and Phillips up front, Sunderland back in the day. Niall Quinn, Kevin Phillips.
You've out-retroed me.
There we go.
You've out-retroed me. On that note, Fergal Brennan, enjoy the Merseyside derby. Keith Tracy, thank you. Enjoy Friday. Hopefully, it's a good match. We are taking a short break, then returning our attention to Gaelic Games with Damien Lawler and Nadine Doherty. We will hopefully be turning our attention shortly after the break. Do you know what? Let's chat to Damien Lawler now in a couple of moments' time.
Game on. Gaelic football.
Now, Damien Lawler joins us on the line because the countdown to the championship is on. The All-Ireland Football Championship throws in this weekend. We have Connacht and Munster quarterfinals and Ulster prelim clash and round one of the Leinster Championship. Not much time to breathe between the league and championship. You'll be up in Ballybuffet on Sunday. It should be an absolute cracking weekend, Damien.
Expecting a huge crowd, Shane. Donegal are favourites to win this game. Derry haven't had the best leagues in the world, obviously. But, you know, you'd imagine that there's a lot of quality in that side over the last couple of years. And if there's ever a time to deliver, it's in the fortress that's in Ballybuffet. But look, Donegal are in a good place too, Shane. But I'm really looking forward to it. Hopefully the weather holds. I think we'll have hard ground, fast-flowing football and a massive crowd as well. And it really a nice way to start the championship up in Ulster. And, of course, you have... You've got other fixtures on this weekend as well, Shane, but I'll be in Ballybuffet. I'll be on the sideline and looking forward to it.
Yeah, a couple of other fixtures. Notably, the only Leinster Championship match on Saturday sees Wexford host Laois. And you yourself, Damien, were speaking to Wexford's Liam Coleman earlier this week about moving on from the league final loss after a perfect run of 7 wins from 7 league matches in Division 4 ahead of their Leinster opener in Chadwick's Wexford Park.
We played them, what, 5 weeks ago in the league, and it was 5 points apiece at half time. And I mean, there was wide galore that day, but it wasn't until the last 10 minutes the scoreline probably didn't reflect the closeness of that game. And it's something we're definitely aware of. We took our opportunities at the end of the game. Probably legs came through, but Carlo are also 5 weeks on. Yeah. So I was going to say pitches are hardening up, but
even though like the Division 4 thing didn't go your way this time. Do you still feel that you're going somewhere and you're within touching distance of maybe taking the next step and getting a bigger crowd behind you to watch attractive Wexford football again?
Yes, definitely. And we even felt that ourselves in the county, there was support growing. A lot of people willing us in the right direction, which is great to know. And we appreciate that, and we do appreciate the support we've gotten. And hopefully we can continue that. And that's up to us to perform. Like, look, we have ideas of what we want to do. We have ideas. We have standards that we set ourselves as a group that we think we can achieve. And it's just words at the moment. So it's just up to us to try and put that.
Wexford's Liam Coleman speaking there. Wexford, probably like a few teams, Damien, in Division 4, to be fair, probably feel their step above. And that was showcased by the fact they did reach a league final, albeit defeated to Limerick. What response do you expect to see from Wexford after that final loss?
Yeah, I expect to see a right good response, to be honest with you, Shane. It's a... You know, Division 4 is so hard to get out of, and you can get done in quicksand very, very easily if you don't win your first two games. And, you know, Laois got up last year, but they found it tough going a tier up. So I think Wexford have a great chance there at home as well. Two games then on Sunday in Leinster, Shane. Really looking forward to Meath versus Carlow. They've had their managerial issues. And then you've had Longford versus Wicklow. There won't be kicking a ball in that. That's over in a Longford game as well. So, look, It's a slow burner, but there's lots of intriguing games there at the same time.
Yeah, you mentioned the Meade-Carlow match, obviously in Páirc Tailteann on Sunday. Carlow now with an interim manager in the form of Joe Murphy and Meade manager Robbie Brennan without the coaching services of experienced Joe McMahon and Martin Corey. How destabilising is that? And have Meade managed to bring in coaching replacements?
Yeah, look, it's very destabilising. And I think, you know, Robbie Brennan will have to be very careful, about, I suppose, about who he brings in at this stage. Players have been used to the two lads, Joe McMahon and Martin Corey. A lot of amazement around that they left at this juncture. A lot of speculation on about that. Meade got 8 points. You know, they did very, very well. They came within a hair's breadth of promotion. So it's very destabilising. As regards Carlo, well, you don't want to be losing your manager mid-season. Shane Curran out, Joe Murphy in. Joe Murphy leaving Naas was a bit of a surprise in itself. And I think both teams with a lot to prove. You'd imagine on league placings at home that Meade will have way too much for Carlo. But, you know, quite simply, speaking to Michael Brambrick, the Carlo captain during the weekend, they have a point to prove now, you know, and they felt they got a statement out and they kind of contested what Shane Curran said about there being player-related issues. And I think the Meade players are then saying that they're none the wiser as to why their two coaches left. So there's a lot of variables up in the air here, and Carlo are really up against it, going up against a Division 2 side away from home too. So I definitely want to watch out for Shane.
Yeah, very much unexpected. No senior hurling championship action this weekend because there still is the small matter of Division 1A and a Division 1B final to play on Sunday. So a 1:45 throw in for Waterford, Offaly before Cork and Tipperary square off at 4 p.m. Even the most optimistic of Tipperary fans may not have been thinking of a league final. So can they go all the way now against an extremely strong Cork side, Damien?
Yeah, they'll find it very hard, particularly that they beat Cork and Thurles in the group stages of the competition, Shane. They'll find it very hard to beat them again at home. I expect Páirc Cúchaoibh to be a C or A. There's not actually a ticket to be had in the place. I can't recall being pestered for league final tickets in hurling before, but it's certainly been the case this time around. Tipperary finished the league campaign, played 6 games, won 5, 10 points. Cork played 6, won 4, 9 points, but Cork were only finding their feet midway through the league, I felt, whereas Tipperary kind of hit the springboard very, very hard and early as well. I think they had to after the demolition job that Cork did on them last summer in Thurles. So I think it's a fine ask for Tipperary, but it's one they'll relish 2 weeks out from a championship game against Limerick. It's a big, big test for them. you'd have to imagine that Cork, with their firepower and being in their own backyard and hurting from last year's All-Ireland final and desperate to land some silverware, you'd have to imagine that they will maybe be slight favours to win this. But the one thing you can say about Tipperary so far this season, they may not be this and they may not be that, but they keep fighting till the bitter end, and maybe the cracks that appeared last year, they don't appear to be there this time around. So I think if they can build on the earlier performances in the league and have a right good showdown in Cork and get ready for the championship in 2 weeks' time, well, that would be positive in itself. But look, Liam Cahill has a tremendous league record as a manager, and he'll be going for silverware. But Pat Ryan will be going for silverware too, especially after losing last year's All-Ireland final. Much akin to Galway in the football. I thought Galway could have done with the league title this year, but I think Cork desperately needed at this time around with the hurling, Shane. And of course, 1B as well. A lot of speculation actually right up to last Friday that game could be switched to Nolan Park between Waterford and Offaly, because they are swept up in the Division 1 ticket madness as well. That'll be an evenly matched game. Bit like Tip and Cork, Waterford finished 6-5, 10 points. Offaly 6-4, 9 points. And a couple of injuries on the Offaly side. Waterford looked to be really, really coming under the radar. And they might just have enough to swing it, but Offaly's resurgence through the tiers continues apace.
And if we just come back to the football championship to end up, I know the FRC are meeting tonight and we might hear what comes from that in the morning. What's on the agenda there, and do we know what is the latest on the Clock Hooter situation ahead of the weekend?
Yeah, Shane, well, I mean, I think there's a data report coming out from the Gamage Intelligence Unit. Jim Gavin is having a call at 7 o'clock this evening, but there's certainly, my understanding is that the Clock Hooter system, which was proposed to be in use for all 2025 football championship games, will possibly only be utilised at games that are broadcast live or streamed. So in other words, the past few weeks, the GAA have been in discussions trying to roll out the Clock Hooter system at all football championship venues. And the aim was to get those systems upgraded up to the required standard for the forthcoming campaign. But Shane, there's a huge number of venues involved. There's a lot of time involved, a lot of resources necessary. And I'm not sure if that will be currently happening. So I think there was a vote midweek by Central Council asking delegates to vote on the path forward, and it's likely that they're going to choose to limit usage of the Clock Hooter system to games that will be either broadcast live, either on TV or streamed only. So that would appear to be the desired option, because it's favoured by the CCCC and it seems to be going to be accepted by the Football Review Committee. So that's probably one thing that might come out of it, Shane. I think you're going to have the latest data reports. I would say that the running of the middle third players is something that is going to raise eyebrows. They're definitely doing up to 14, 15K at high speed, in my opinion. I don't have any scientific evidence, but I'm just watching the efforts that are putting in and the high interval paces and the sustained periods that the new rules have brought in. So, look, it'll be very, very interesting, but possibly last bit of housekeeping before the championship starts, Shane.
Okay, great stuff. We will leave the conversation there for now. Damian Lawler, RT Sport GAA reporter. Of course, you can watch Donegal against Derry in the Ulster Football Championship on Sunday from 1:15 on RT2 and the RT Player. And there will, of course, be Gaelic Games commentary and coverage across Saturday and Sunday Sport on RTE Radio 1.
Game on. Gaelic football. RTE. 2FM. Game on. Ladies football.
Now, you're very welcome back to the show. Nadine Doherty joins us to review the latest round of the Ladies Football National League. As we know, the makeup of the final now. So the final round of league matches saw both league finalists defeated in Division 1. Meath surge at the top end of the game to defeat Armagh by the minimum, and Dublin led for the majority of their encounter against Kerry and deservedly held out for a 2-point win. In Division 2, it will be Galway against Cork. So Kerry, Armagh, Galway, Cork, expected finalists, Nadine?
Yeah, definitely. And definitely in terms of Division 2, Shane, you'd have had teams who went well. Donegal actually had a few good results and Manon had a few good results, but it would have been a huge surprise had those teams not made the final. In terms of Division 1, considering if you look at the first half of the league, yeah, you know, the first four games, Armagh just flew out of the blocks. Kerry have really steadied the ship since. So, yeah, look, it's been no surprise. Even though, yeah, they both suffered defeat at the weekend.
Okay, let's get into those matches. Let us start actually with Waterford against Mayo. Waterford 2-13, Mayo 1-6. Waterford finished third in the league. And I don't know if they're the most frustrating team to predict, yeah, as you have learned throughout the course of the campaign, yeah, but to watch, because they have a big result in them.
Yeah.
And I was going to say perhaps is consistency, but then they've won 4 out of 7. Well, so that's fairly consistent.
Yeah, that's it. So you can't really have a go at them there. But, you know, that we said, like, how funny was it a few weeks ago that they beat Armagh by 10 points? I was texting you, I was laughing. Yeah. But
never going to happen.
Never going to happen. But then, you know, the next game, and, you know, I was thinking, I was looking at them, and yeah, look, they totally deserve to beat Mayo. But again, it was just the inconsistency in performance. Had they been playing a Meath or, you know, a top team in that division, they probably wouldn't have gotten over the line, Shane. So very frustrating. But look, I felt with the game itself, the difference between the teams, Waterford, they were more clinical with their final product. They were more dynamic in attack. And it was really evident, Shane, and this has been the case for them all year, that they massively lack experience. They were making basic unforced errors. Their handling wasn't crisp. Their decision making, their skill level, and the big thing with that Mayo team at the minute, it's their lack of physicality that's required at this level. It's just reflective of their young age profile. They have a lot of minors, a lot of young players starting on their journey at senior level, and you need a blend of experience to balance that out. So while, you know, look, they scored the first goal, they started with great intensity, which you'd expect from a team who are, you know, trying to stay up, but they enjoyed so much possession, especially in that first quarter, but then they didn't score after the second minute in that first half. So, you know, you're definitely not going to win chances. They were most productive in attack, actually, when they pressed the Waterford kick out, when they pressed the Waterford defence. And out of their 1-6, I think they scored 1-4 or 1-5 from turnovers. But, you know, I suppose to sum up their year again, like, they moved Danielle Caldwell, one of their best defenders, to into the full forward line. And, you know, at senior level, Shane, you really can't be doing that. Sinead Walsh, their most dangerous forward, probably one of the best forwards in the league. She'd likely get on that team of the league, to be honest. She was out in the middle trying to pick up ball, and we only really saw her when taken free. So, look, you know, after 15 minutes, you felt Mayo probably weren't going to get anything out of the game. But you have to give that young team huge credit. They battled. They really battled to the end. They had a goal chance at the end, you know, in the last second. But overall, yeah, it was just that. It was that physical presence, that crispness in possession, and the lack of unforced errors that Waterford had. You know, their stats were better than Mayo, and that's how it went.
One win from 7 league matches for Mayo. How damaging is that going to be, short term in terms of the championship, but also long term for how Mayo football is viewed?
Yeah, do you know, I was actually thinking, Shane, I can't remember, and if anybody knows, they can text in, I can't remember Mayo not being in Division 1.
Wow.
I genuinely can't in the last 20 years. Maybe they did have a spell down there, but I can't remember. I just think this year, and we've spoken about it a lot, there's a huge mountain to climb now in the summer. They have some brilliant young players. And when you consider how, this must be the frustrating thing for everybody in Mayo, great young players, and you consider all the players who aren't available, you just think about that potential they have within the county to have a squad capable of challenging for honours and being a top team. But they need support, they need guidance, they need coaching, Shane, and they're not getting it. So I feel it's going to be a very, very tricky summer for them. And when you talk about relegation, and I know a ball hasn't been kicked in the championship yet, but when you look down the line, I find it very difficult to not see Mayo there at the minute, unless something changes in terms of personnel on the pitch, off the pitch, but they need something different.
Okay, tricky campaign for Tyrone as well. They lost last weekend 4-10 to 2-8 to Kildare. How big of an achievement is it for Kildare to retain Division 1 status?
Yeah, massive. And I think they will take a huge bounce from that. And we've spoken about it before. You know, 2 of their wins were against their Leinster counterparts. They're going to bring that into the championship. I think for Kildare football going down the line, once you build a couple of years back to back in the top division, Shane, you have players playing at the top level. So it's going to do huge things for them. It was great to see the match being played. It was the first ladies football match being played in the new county grounds, which was brilliant. And look, while Kildare will take a huge amount out of staying up in Division 1, Tyrone will take a huge amount, I think, going forward into the Intermediate Championship, having played against those top teams. And yeah, look, they got relegated, and they got relegated, I suppose, by a lot in terms of points and wins and so on. But that just intense Division 1 football will definitely stand them. They got to the All-Ireland Intermediate Final last year, you know. So yeah, I think they'll take a lot from it too. And both teams, you know, it wasn't a case that they were the whipping team of the division. Tyrone, they were they competed, you know, they got a really good win over Mayo. So definitely a very productive couple of months for both teams, having come up from Division 2.
Was there an air of challenge match off Meath and Armagh? Perhaps not a challenge match, but with a view to the championship. And I'm just judging that off the amount of substitutions that were made.
Yeah, what was it? 13
for Armagh and 7 at half time for me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, look, I think so. But having said that, like, it was competitive. And me, Armagh definitely wanted to win it. Like, they kept Laura McConville on Vicky Wall for the whole game. And, you know, I'd feel if they didn't really care 100% about the result, they would have taken Laura McConville off. But yeah, look, it was a dead rubber. And I think, again, if we're looking forward, or sorry, in terms of the game, actually, it was a really good game, Shane, because it kind of had that challenge game to it. It was open, you know, in terms of goals. We had 6 goals. It was really entertaining.
Yeah, sorry, me 2-12, Armagh 4-5. So the result.
That was really competitive. But again, look, Armagh are focusing to next weekend. That's their big focus. But I think for Meath as well, and we've spoken about them being competitive in this league campaign, but I think they will take a lot of learning from it. They have to figure out how they are going to utilise Vicky Wall, because they've learned in the last couple of games she's going to be a marked woman, very much so. Laura McConville has shadowed her, Grace Coss, Kayleigh Cronin, all to different effect. And they're going to have to figure out ways of helping her, because she isn't getting a huge amount of protection from referees either, Shane. And I think it's very evident when you watch it week in, week out. So they're going to have to figure out a way of her influencing games a little bit more, along with Emma Duggan. You know, where is the best place to play Emma Duggan? Is it on the inside forward line, what they've done in the last 2 games? She finished the game excellently. She got them over the line there at the weekend. Or is it that free role between the 45 that we've seen her for the last couple of years really thrive? So look, for me, they have a lot to think about. But I think overall, they'll be very happy with their league campaign.
Okay, how big a win, even mentally and again with an eye to the championship? Kerry already had the league final secure. Dublin 2-12, Kerry 2-10. Would you look much into that result?
No, I wouldn't look much into it, but I think Dublin will enjoy it. For sure.
Anytime beating Kerry, I can assure you. Yeah. Anytime Dublin beat Kerry, it's a good day.
And look, anytime beating the All-Ireland champions. And, you know, again, we're talking about they all, you know, they use substitutions. But Dublin went up in that game. I think they went up by about 9 points after a quarter of an hour. And you could ask the question, you know, if Kerry didn't care that much about the result, why did they bring on 9 subs at halftime with a few big names thrown in there? But Dublin also rested a number of key players. You know, Martha Burnden, Stark, Grace Coss, Kate Sullivan. So, look, both teams, you know, they spread out a lot of players across the game. But I thought Dublin were impressive again. They were clinical. They were focused. They aren't going to lie down, Shane. That's for sure. They're not going to go away. And there's plenty of life in Dublin yet. And I think out of all the teams in the division, I think Dublin showed very, very well. And there's a lot more to come. But the game itself, yeah, look, there was a strong wind as well. But Dublin's experience just in those last few minutes, it's told a bit of a tale for sure. And I think they'll take it with them into the summer.
Okay, great stuff. We have ran out of road, unfortunately. We will preview the 2 finals in detail next week and talk about a managerial movement in the lower divisions, because the Offaly ladies footballers are on the hunt for their 3rd manager of the season. Michael Verney has a story in the Irish Independent. However, before we hear from Daniel Whiffen, some team news ahead of the Merseyside derby. And good news for Irish fans, Caoimhín Kelleher starts in goal for Liverpool. Curtis Jones, interestingly, at right back. Of course, no Trent, no Conor Bradley. So it's Kelleher, Jones, Kanate, Van Dijk, Robertson, Gravenberch, McAllister, Szoboszlai, Salah, Diaz and Jota. And for Everton, Pickford, Jake O'Brien starts, which good news for Irish fans as well. James Dakowski, Brant Wade, Mikulenko, Gay, Garner, Harrison, Alcaraz, Doucouré and Beto up top. Now, as I did promise, we will be hearing from Daniel Whiffen, because the Irish Olympic gold medalist has said that he will attempt to break a world record at the upcoming Irish Open Swimming Championships at the National Aquatic Centre in Dublin next week. Whiffen, who won the Olympic gold in the men's 800 metre freestyle at the Paris Games last year, will swim the 400, 800 and 1500 metre freestyle. And he was speaking to our own John Kenny.
The 800 is the hardest to break, just in terms of like how fast the record is, in terms of my times as well. 400, I think, could be quite close. I've been training a lot more speed at the moment, and that's why I think 400 is going to be a good event to watch. And then obviously the 1500 is the one I'm closest in, so that's always going to be if I'm going to get it on the day. So, I mean, yeah, I guess the 1500 probably is the most likely.
But you could earn a lot more if you broke this at major championship meets. So why specifically target the Irish Open?
The main reason is because I want to see the Irish supporters come out and support me and support the rest of the Irish team, try and like push boundaries. You know, like, when have you ever been able to see Olympic champion at Irish trials or Olympic medalist? So I honestly think people should just come down to to the NAC and just come and watch it. That's my perspective on that. And obviously, like, the monetary side is like, yeah, it's great. I can go break the world champ. I can go break the world record again. You know what I mean? It's like in swimming, you can break whenever you want. Like, I'm choosing to do to try and break it out of shells because I haven't done a fast race in a very long time, and that's what I want to do for the public.
Well, you announced yourself on the world scene at the World Under 23 Championships, which also was at the NAC as well. The NAC is obviously a pool you like.
Yeah, I've been racing in it from when I was like 12 years old. So the pool's great. It's fast. I've gone fast. I've hit my best in that pool was 14:35. So it's not slow. And yeah, I'm looking forward to trying just bettering my best.
You did the 1500 meters recently in Edinburgh with your brother. Were you happy enough with the way things went there?
Yeah, faster than that time last year. So, I mean, I can't ask for any more than that. I've done like 3 months left training and ended up faster in the long run. So it's actually working out everything that I thought would. So look, it's just making me more and more confident going to the Irish Champs.
What's your plans? Will you stay in Loughborough? There's talk about you moving. I know your brother's gone to California, but what about your own position?
Oh, it's still up in the air. It's because I'm finishing my degree in Loughborough. So I basically have to make the decision if I want to stay in Loughborough or do I want to take something new and move away from, move away from Ireland further away. So I don't really know yet. I'll decide in June. Well, I'll probably make my decision like over the next couple of weeks, but I'll probably be able to, I want to tell like, all my coaches and stuff like that what I want to do first. So we'll see what happens. But at the moment, I'm enjoying training in Loughborough. I'm enjoying training with my brother and my training partners. And I've got to finish my degree. So that's what I'm at the moment.
So immediate plans is obviously the Irish Open. What's the rest of the year for you? Obviously, the World Championships, you opted to do a time. World Championships in Singapore, that's probably on the horizon for you too.
Yeah, so we'll have Irish Champs. I go on camp to Arizona with and there's some Irish women going with me as well, which will be a good camp. And then we've got the Men Ostrom series, and then I've got my exams, and then we have maybe a set of collie, I'm not sure, and then into the World Champs in Singapore.
Daniel Whiffen speaking to John Kenny there, the Irish Swimming Open Championships next week, and we will be previewing them on Game On next week as well. So hopefully he does break that world record. A massive thank you to John Farrell and Laura Lee Davis working on this evening's show. John Farrell, our producer, Laura Lee Davis, our broadcast coordinator. Game On is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow. Beta da Silva is up next with the new music show, so do not go anywhere. Do stay tuned to 2FM. And as I mentioned, Merseyside Derby, Caoimhín Kelleher starts for Liverpool. Alisson, of course, concussed during the international break, and Jacob Ryan starts for Everton. So a bit of an Irish interest in that one. We will review all of the Premier League action tomorrow from tonight, and plenty more to look forward to tomorrow. From all of us here at Game On, it is bye-bye.